Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
Oh, man. I tell you, it was almost too hot for me. I mean, a blistering 81 degrees, but I muddled through, I mean, with sand in my shoes and the salty air in my lungs, I was able to survive the day.
So you're there in Hawaii.
I am.
Making sure that no one in the press brings stuff into Hawaii that they aren't supposed to.
More or less.
Has it been busy? Have you been busy there helping out our great country?
I have.
Even though some people say Hawaii's not really part of the country.
No. Considering the way we took it over, it's amazing they even let us on the shore. But, no, it's looking good. We're working hard, and some days we're hardly working. And, it's tough because, sometimes you just don't know whether you should just get up and go down to the pool or, you know, get up and go down to the beach or, you know, maybe sometimes, you know, have another Corona. You just don't know.
Well, here we're recording this at the tail end of Festivus,
which itself is a Festivus.
It's our miracle. Yes, it is our special annual Festivus show,
which I am dead set against because I don't believe you should force your Festivus upon me.
Too bad.
The war on Festivus, and by God, I am heading it up.
Well, guess what? I'm the one with the microphone. I'm the one with the recording device, and I'm the producer of this here podcast.
What's the temperature back home, by the way?
It is 10 below with a wind chill of up to 35 below.
Darn. Here, let me better check my, yep, 79 degrees with a blistering wind chill of 74 degrees.
I think that will be the first of my grievances.
What were you talking about? What did you have that I don't have?
Grievances.
Oh, I was thinking more of mic, but that's okay. You can have your microphone.
So, Joe, you landed in Hawaii, what, about a week ago?
Has it been a week? My gosh, it has. Yeah, I got here on the 15th, and it was a long, arduous flight. And
arduous,
yeah, whatever it was long. I'm telling you that we had to stop in Seattle while they put pillows and blankets on the seats because apparently that was the long part. You know, getting Minneapolis to Seattle was easy. The rest of it was hard. I was kind of bummed it was an overnight flight just because I didn't get to see any of the ocean. I would have thought it'd be neat to get a picture of either the ocean just kind of expanding off into the wilderness. But I did settle for the 100 hottest pictures of cheerleaders you'll ever see. So I was okay.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. Now, well, first off, I have to ask because people have asked, were there any hobos on the flight?
Not on the flight, but by Gumby, they're certainly under the underpasses, along the fences, on the beach. Somebody said apparently some unsavory community sent one-way tickets and sent all their homeless to Hawaii.
And well, if you're going to send them somewhere.
Is Hawaii happy about that?
Yeah, I imagine I imagine that they're thinking of some ways to get even. What I would do, I would send a bunch of tikis. Because in my childhood, I know a lot about the Tiki God because of the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, the same thing.
And if you find a Tiki God, you can't get rid of it. You can't just throw it in the ocean, get rid of it. Nope, the Tiki God will hunt you down.
Well, considering they're around here like elves on a shelf back home, I don't think we have to worry about that too badly. But we did. Not everything here is hardcore work. I was able to get a little time off and do a bit of running around. And while a lot of my friends headed to the beach and headed to the bars, where do you think I headed, Corey?
to the internet for porn?
No, no. I did head to the internet only to find out how to get to Pearl Harbor.
Ah.
And being the history buff I am, I went and paid my respects at the USS Arizona Memorial. And that, like most of the national monuments, you go, you get a time ticket, and there's plenty of museums and other things to look at. And then eventually you get on the boat, you can go over to Arizona. And it's really fairly quick because, you know, you once you see it, it's very, very somber. And they kind of get you there. You have about 15, 20 minutes to look around. I saw the infamous oil slick popping up. Trivia time. Because if we're going to talk history, let's get people some historical facts here. How many survivors of the USS Arizona are left alive?
I believe the answer is zero.
It's getting there. There's about eight.
Ah,
okay. They had buried one about 2 weeks ago. If you are a survivor of the Arizona, you are allowed to be interned with your friends who are still there. And apparently there are eight left, I believe. They said that the rate the Arizona is deteriorating, it'll probably be gone in about 200 years, I think, maybe less. And they're, you know, we're just from the barnacles and from the rusting. One thing that was interesting at Pearl Harbor was meeting some actual witnesses of Pearl Harbor. And they all seem, when they're there, they also have their own book. And you know me, I love signed things. So I was able to get a couple signed books. One of them, Counting My Blessings from Herb Weathermax. I believe he's 98 years old and he is a survivor of the Pearl Harbor attack. And he went on to disarm bombs across Europe. So it was amazing to meet a gentleman like that. And another person there, his name was Alfred B.K. Rodriguez. And he calls himself there were two gentlemen I met, and I'm gonna mix them up here. He calls himself an eyewitness. And he also survived Pearl Harbor and wrote a nice book. And he's a very personable gentleman. You get a chance to talk to him. I think there was always a thing about the greatest generation who fought in World War II and how they pretty much kept to themselves coming home. And now I think they're realizing when they die, their stories die with them. And so a lot of them are getting out and getting their stories. I was able to meet a gentleman. He did a book called Pearl Harbor, The Complete Illustrated History. His name's Alan Sheedon, and he was there. So you're already, I've got four books here, and I picked up even one for my wife, called Elvis in Hawaii by Jerry.
Oh, wow.
Because what I didn't realize, and I found out, Elvis, he obviously hangs in Hawaii, but he donated and raised quite a bit of money for the USS Arizona Memorial. Elvis being the modest guy he was, you know, they give him a plaque and award for it. He basically shelved them all and kept them under wraps. And now you can go to Graceland and actually see the rows of awards that Elvis got for his generosity and raising charity. Just amazing, an amazing thing. So I got that for Chris, kind of a late Christmas present. And I don't mind telling you guys this because she obviously, you know, doesn't listen to our podcast. But that was day one. Day two, I went back because there's other things you can do at Pearl Harbor. The other ones cost a bit of money. They do have the USS Bowfin, which is a submarine, and it's docked there permanently. It's called the Pearl Harbor Avenger because apparently it has gone out and it had sunk 44 enemy ships during the course of her nine war patrols, and survived. submarine was not the very best career choice if you during World War II. But it is docked there. You're able to go inside. But the majority of the day I spent on the battleship Missouri, which is permanently parked there as kind of a guard over the USS Arizona. And we went on, I think it was like $22 for the tour. And I won't go on and on about it, but it was really amazing. I mean, I look at the map and we really, there's really only one deck open. You know, you got the main deck and you can go up about five levels in the superstructure as high up as the bridge. And it goes beyond that. And then you can go down into the second deck where a lot of the crew spent all of their living time when they weren't busy fighting World War II. And from there, there's at least five or six decks under it. So you're seeing very little of this huge, huge battleship. And the amazing thing about it, well, I'll share three stories with this and then we'll get on. Cause I mean, to me, I was just almost overwhelmed just being on this thing. The first thing they have is the surrender deck where the Japanese signed the documents ending World War II. And they have a bronze plaque in the floor where it actually happened. We followed a salty Navy veteran, and he was explaining to us about the time that a kamikaze hit the Missouri. He said the plane had come in, and it hit the side. One of the wings of the kamikaze fell off, hit the gun turret, and get on fire. And do you know how much damage the Missouri took?
I do not.
They needed three coats of paint to cover up the damage.
Oh.
Did absolutely nothing to the Missouri. You can lean over the railing and see right where the dent is that the plane made impact. Such was the craftsmanship of the battleship Missouri. Just amazing. But I know most of you aren't thinking of World War II trivia. You're thinking just how in the hell did they get the Missouri moving for that incredible movie Battleship? And you know how they did that, Corey?
They made a movie of Battleship?
Yep. The Hasbro game. And the Missouri was a big part of it. And you know how they were able to film the Missouri as it went out to fight the aliens?
Models?
No, they use the actual ship.
Oh, what had happened? I don't know.
What had happened is the Missouri happened to be in dry dock because there were leaks, there were barnacles, they wanted to repair it. The studio paid to have the Missouri towed out to sea so they could take some photography with it and then tow it back to where it's berthed now. Cause I thought it was CGI and models myself. But no, they actually moved the thing out there. So apparently, you got enough money. You too could tow the Missouri out for weddings. And actually they don't do weddings, but, now you would think between the beaches and the women and the heat and the historical monuments and the heat and the women and the beaches and the beaches that
and the heat.
I would not have time to go to one of the four comic shops that I discovered on the island.
Well, I really hope you did find a comic shop because otherwise this episode is going to
it's going to be all
comic deficient.
All history. Joe went to Hawaii and gave us a history lesson. Yes, no, I did make it to a comic store on the way back from a visit to Waikiki Beach.
Waikiki.
We went by a mall that I knew had a comic store in it. And my friends were like, well, we don't want to get off. And I was like, okay, see you later. Boom. And I jumped off the bus. I stopped at a place called Other Realms. And it's located in the Ward Warehouse, second floor, 1050 Al Mona Boulevard in Honolulu. Really incredible shop. I mean, the people there were really friendly. It's a very small half game, half comic shop. It's got not a tremendous amount of back issues, mostly newer stuff, but there were a few things on the wall. And I picked up a couple things, as I'm wont to do. The first one was I picked up Doctor Who Prisoner of Time number 3, but I picked up the one cover that apparently I found out too late. If you line up all the covers, it forms a gigantic montage.
Ooh.
And I think issue 2 and 3, I ended up getting the photo variant. And then I picked up some other variants. So when I get home, I've got to figure out which ones I'm missing. And I know number 3 I was missing, so I picked that up. I picked up all new X-Men number 19, the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. variant edition.
Ooh.
This one's got the entire cast on it. And I guess there are some other ones too. And, you know, but what I did is, you know, between, you know, most of the time you can find these on eBay for about $6 plus shipping. I'm like, well, these guys had it for $10, which was eBay plus shipping. So I picked it up. And then I picked up, Empowered number 8, which we've talked about in the past. Adam Warren, who was a guest at the last, Falcon, latest volumes out. It had an August release date, so it didn't come under one of my box date things. So I know I can pick it up without a problem. So I got plenty of reading material, and I won't even get into. Yeah, I went to the Honolulu Zoo today, but we won't get into that because that was fun, and it was warm, and it was sunny, and it did I mention it was warm?
Yes.
Okay.
You did.
I did. So anyways, if you get a chance, I say Other Realms Limited, really nice people. You know, I talked to them. And of course, one of the things they do in Hawaii almost religiously is when you use a credit card, they ask for your ID. So I show them my Minnesota card and I just tell them, I am really glad to be here. One of the owners, he asked, how did I find the shop? And I said, I just Googled it. And I said, I'm working at the airport. You're the closest one to me. So, I was actually going to try to get to two of the other comic book shops today, but what had happened was, is that while I was on the bus, I fell asleep at my and missed the transfer point. And that's how I ended up going to the Honolulu Zoo. I figured, well, no sense backtracking. Let's go to the zoo. Fair substitute for comics,
I suppose.
And that, you know, that was my 1 week so far. I've still got 2 more weeks left before I head home, unless, you know, for some reason Obama gets up and leaves.
Or unless they decide to leave you there. Or unless they say, you know, you've been in Hawaii, but you haven't been in Alaska for a while. Let's send you back to Barrow.
It could happen. There are people here getting orders to go, I mean, they're going to leave from Hawaii to wherever. And some of them are like, I don't have my cold weather gear with me. But I haven't seen anything. I don't know if I'm going or not.
Well, I'm sure you will find out.
Yes.
So, Joe, are we ready?
I don't know. What have you been doing up in the land of the cold, icy snow?
Well, I have been working and working and working and working. The last 2 weeks, I've actually been kind of, I don't want to say obsessed. So let's say captivated. I found the box that had a lot of my Marvel black and white magazines in it.
Oh, fun.
So I've been reading, a lot of that. And really enjoying it.
Cool.
The art is usually a step up because a lot of the artists who Marvel had, let's just say some of them were getting tired of superheroes by the 70s. So when they got a chance to do other stuff, you could see that they were really knocking themselves out. The black and white magazines also had a bit of a higher budget. Because they didn't have to pay colorists. The cover price was usually, comics were about 20 cents. The black and white magazines were 75 cents. They would put in reprints of 50 stories. So the artists who were doing this stuff really took a little extra time. A lot of them inked their own work. So the art is kind of a step up from the stuff in the regular 70s comics. They also knew that the printing would be better. So you've got some really good Gene Colan art, some amazing John Buscema art, and of course, an artist whose art never really appealed to me that much, but I love his name, Sonny Trinidad. And whenever I saw his name, it was always, I'd have in my head, come to Sonny Trinidad. let's see. I hold in my hand something that Amazon just sent me that I am looking forward to.
What's that?
The Legends of Mid-South Wrestling.
Ooh.
Now, I have heard about I didn't get back into wrestling until I think it was either 1990 or 1991. And over the years, I've heard that, Mid-South was the best wrestling promotion. The guys on PW Insider talk about it a lot. I've actually, a couple of people I know who aren't wrestling fans have said, is there any way you can get your hands on that Mid-South stuff? Because when they were running that, it was really, really good. So I got home today from the Festivus party, and there was an Amazon box with the smile on it sitting on my deck, and inside the 3-disc set, the Legends of Mid-South. So now, Joe, do you know about Mid-South wrestling? Did you watch it?
I'm aware of it, but I never watched it.
Okay. So we will know more about it, because I will probably be watching it over the holidays.
Neat.
But the big thing is, it is Festivus. It is my favorite holiday, and part of Festivus is the airing of the grievances, which I have been doing on Twitter all day. And we will be doing it here on this here podcast. So, Joe, are you ready for the first of the grievances?
Sure.
And you can chime in and agree or disagree or whatever. I am tired of people saying that cosplayers and women cosplayers in particular are not true fans. That was a big thing this year, where even comic book artists were complaining about, these women who dress up like characters, they don't know anything about the characters. They're not real fans. They're just getting in the way. No. If they're taking the time and spending the money to dress up like a character, they're a fan. If they come in and they buy a single comic book, they're a fan. If they pay money to watch the movie, they're a fan. If they've bought the Wonder Woman underoos, there's a fan. Can we please quit chasing people away from our clubhouse? Anybody who wants to be a fan of comic books and comic book characters and nerdy stuff is allowed in, Joe.
The 2013 Darwin Awards are out. They're basically cut and paste from last couple years.
Yeah. I've learned that most of the things in the Darwin Awards are urban legends,
yeah,
and they can rarely trace it back to actual happenings. There's another grievance.
Yep, and I agree with you on that, because I've in the last hour, I've had to go to Snopes.com and just post on people's walls, what you just posted is false. You know, really, people, if you see something on Facebook, before you repost it with vim and vigor and get your undies in a bunch, just check Snopes first, you know, and they can pretty much tell you if it's true or false. And who knows? It may be true. I bet you dollars to donuts and a can of Spam all over the place. It's not.
Yeah, that's one of the questions I have to ask about Hawaii. I've always heard that they eat a lot of Spam there. Is that true?
Well, let's just say there's some very creative Spam dishes in the various restaurants. And they do have plenty at the local Costco.
And have you been eating any Spam dishes at the local restaurants?
No, I have been trying to sample local cuisine, but I haven't found much.
Market manipulation. There's a grievance I have. The whole shiny cover thing that DC did in September, where it's, oh gosh, we're not going to be able to print enough copies. Joe, how do you order comics?
I don't know. How many you want?
Let's say you own a shop.
Okay.
And DC says, we're printing this comic book in September.
Well,
you as a shop say, I'd like 50 of those.
Well, it depends.
And DC gets that and says, huh, they want 50 of them. Maybe we should print 50 and send it to them.
That would be nice. That was always one of the things that, you know, and I think we've talked about it before. Just the biggest problem they got going right now is just everything has a variant cover and none of them have any real value.
I find it fascinating that you can look for a book the week it comes out and it'll be $50 on eBay. You wait 2 to 3 weeks, cover price.
Yeah.
Who's buying these books the first week at $50? If you have that much money to throw away, buy ads on this here podcast.
Well said.
People who are fans of a company.
Just a company?
Yeah. Well, I just buy Marvel stuff. I just buy.
Are there still people like that?
Yes, there are. Now, here's the thing. I bag on DC a lot, mostly because
they deserve
I really
it.
Enjoyed their stuff until they did the New 52, and it's now to the point where I don't even keep up on Batman. But I don't follow companies. I follow creators. Right now, I like Marvel a lot. But if Brian Michael Bendis and Matt Fraction and Jason Aaron and other people went over to Image, guess what? I'd go over to Image and buy their books there. Matter of fact, there are some creators who've gone to Image and I buy their books there. Or if they went to Oni or they went to Dark Horse or they went to Boom or they went to Dynamite. You know, Matt Wagner's writing books for Dynamite. Guess what I'm buying, Joe? Matt Wagner books from Dynamite.
Oh, I thought you were going to go by Newsweek, and I was going to say it's not being published anymore.
Oh, it is. You just have to buy it digitally. Let's see. Hating things before they come out.
That's the American way.
I don't know if Ben Affleck will be good as Batman. I don't know if the Walking Dead spinoff series will be any good. I don't know. I don't know. And you know how I'll know if they're good? When they come out and if they're any good! Told you, I got a lot of problems with people. You know what else is? Here's another grievance, Joe. I'm sick of Miley Cyrus's tongue.
Every Stop picture, Googling it.
Every time I see a picture of her, she's sticking her tongue out.
I've gone like 3 weeks without seeing a picture of her. What websites are you visiting?
Oh, it's not just the websites. It's the magazines, because I get Entertainment Weekly. Every picture of her in Entertainment Weekly, she's got her tongue sticking out. Joe, you know I work with developmentally disabled people, right? Most of them walk around with their tongue sticking out. Is that the look Miley Cyrus is going for? And by the way, the next person who tells me, oh, she's hot, she's sexy, I'm going to call the cops. Because she looks like a 12-year-old boy. You know who's hot? You know who's sexy? Christina Hendricks. That's who's hot and sexy. And if she knocked on my door right now, that would be
the end of the podcast. Miracle.
Damn right.
Well, no, we'd have a podcast next week if you're bragging about it.
Yeah. Let's see. Last time I was in the comic shop, they had the whole bunch of the Grimm Fairy Tales things.
Oh, yeah.
Those creep me the hell out. Quit taking children's characters and turning them into softcore porn.
Oh, you want hardcore?
I don't want any porn. You know what? Create your own characters for your porn. I don't want to see, I really don't want to see Little Miss Muppet showing off her tuffet. let's see. The phrase, and things will never be the same. Guess what? If the movie comes out and it's based on the old stuff, by the time the movie comes out, things are going to be the same. For all the people who were, oh, I don't like, Spider-Man's Dr. Octopus now, and it's, they've killed Peter Parker, and it's terrible. Guess what? There's a new Spider-Man movie that's going to be out in May. I'm thinking Peter Parker will be Spider-Man by May.
Not to mention they're fictional.
Yes.
Fictional. They're not really living, folks.
Let's see. When fans start to complain about a book got canceled and they don't understand why. You know why books get canceled? Because they're not selling well enough. So if you like a book and you don't want it to be canceled and the sales are low, buy it and tell other people to buy it too. And if they listen to you, the sales will go up and it won't get canceled. Except in the case of Daredevil, and then they're just canceling it so they could start it with the new number one the next month. So there are my grievances. There's the start of my grievances, Joe. Do you have any grievances?
Well, see, I for one don't buy Festivus as a holiday. I think it's just a made up secular holiday. And if truth be told,
all holidays are made up.
I'm going to declare a war on Festivus.
Oh, you took that job at Fox News, didn't you?
No, I couldn't get Fox interested because they got that whole war on Christmas thing going, and
they did the war. They actually talked about how Festivus was a sham and how it's attacking Christmas, and they said that Festivus is bad and wrong. And so I am now continuing my 17-year boycott of Fox News.
Which is kind of funny considering it was a made-up holiday to begin with.
Well, all of them are made-up holidays.
Oh, they all go back, you know, long time ago, Ugg saw flower drop pod, you know, and that pretty much started it all.
Right. But it's not that, you know, the Earth was created and someone left a calendar. And then as humans came about, they found this calendar and went, oh, look, hey, there's a 4th of July and a Memorial Day and a Labor Day and an Arbor Day and a Thanksgiving. This is cool. We should go by this. You can fight Festivus all you want, but I will continue to celebrate it every year. I already had the feats of strength. I went to the gym and I did my leg workout, and I aired my grievances on Twitter, and I aired my grievances on this here podcast. And as soon as I am done, I will be having the feast, which is probably spaghetti because it's easy to make.
I just made Pop-Tarts.
Now, Pop-Tarts. I have a question about Pop-Tarts, Joe.
No, I don't really pop them.
But do you have the box there?
No.
Oh, because on the box they have a freshness date.
Yes.
Are Pop-Tarts ever really fresh?
Well, I think that's why you have to. It's like, you know, years ago they used to have a thing called the McShaker, but people wouldn't shake them, and it led into all sorts of disasters. And
dogs and cats sleeping together. That's hysteria.
And I think with Pop-Tarts, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, really, folks, yeah, you can eat it raw, but to get the full effect of Pop-Tart flavor, you have to toast it or nuke it. Toasting is preferred, and get the chemicals to magically bond into its fruity goodness. If you think about it, Pop-Tarts are almost like miniature pies.
No, not really.
It's the best you're going to get.
You're wrong. I have the Banquet frozen pies, the little ones that look like pot pies. I have those in my freezer. I have a raspberry pie in my fridge, and I left a blueberry pie in the car, so it's now can be used to beat people over the head with because it's frozen hard as a rock. I always have pie.
That's not true.
I do now.
After you're done eating it, you have no pie.
Wrong. I always have more.
Nope.
It's like with shampoo. You know how, I'm starting to get a little low on shampoo. I better go get some shampoo for when I run out. That's how I am with pie. It's like, starting to run a little low on pie. I better stop at the store on the way home, make sure I have more. Don't want to run out. Don't want to have a morning where I come home from work and I look in the fridge and there's no pie. That'd be a bad thing. It's not allowed. Let me guess, you're one of those guys who runs out of shampoo.
I'm bald. What do I care about shampoo?
Well, there is that.
I care more about shampoo than I do Festivus. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So, Joe, shall we do freaking and geeking?
Well, I think we've done enough freaking.
Those were grievances, not freaking.
No, trust me, they were freaking.
Well, I do have one serious thing that I want to say. At the beginning of the show, you will always hear me say that I am your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. That is actually taken from a radio personality I had a lot of admiration for and I listened to religiously as a kid. It was Larry Lujack, who I heard on WLS, The Rock of Chicago, 890. He also had the nickname Super Jock and would do a bit every morning called Animal Stories, where he was your charming and delightful old Uncle Lair, telling stories to little snot-nosed Tommy Edwards, who was the next DJ. He passed away earlier this week. And when I was in college, I did college radio, and I patterned a lot of the stuff I did after him. There is a lot of his attitude in this podcast and what I do. And if you've never heard Larry Lujack, you should go to YouTube, put his name in, listen to some of his bits, because he was one of the first DJs who brought his own personality to the show, and a lot of people have listed him as an influence. David Letterman said that he was influenced by him. A lot of stand-up comedians were influenced by him. And a few years ago, he started putting out CDs of the old Animal Stories bits, and I've always enjoyed them. He retired from radio in, I think, 85, and then he came back and did a few more years and retired recently. He passed away, so I want to give a salute to Larry Lujack, and I want to thank his memory for kind of putting me on the path to doing this sort of thing. But then when I found out what it was like to be in radio, it's like, no, I don't want to move town to town. You know, he was a guy, he was number one in the market for years, and he still had to move town to town. Because it's, we're cleaning house. You're going to have to go find a job in Portland. Good luck.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons I never did radio. I mean, because it was kind of like, first of all, you had to start out, you know, doing hog reports. And you weren't at WKRP, I'll tell you that. And if you did happen to strike it big, you weren't there long. You know, you might have a good run. I mean, we have a local DJ, John Hines, who I think pretty much has bucked the trend because he stayed here pretty much his entire career that I can remember. I remember listening to him as a kid on KSTP AM back when AM was king, and he went to an extremely popular run on WLOL with I think it's John Hines and Bob Berglund. And then he went over to, I think K104, which was a, country station, and it had another tremendous run. And I know he's on the radio now. I don't know where. It's just one of those, if he's on like a sports radio or somewhere, but he's just defied the odds. He's just a local radio celebrity and he's always here. Whereas most of the guys I remember, like I think Steve Cochran was here, big in Chicago. Yeah, he was here for a number of years and one day he was just gone. I don't know where he went. If he went back to Chicago or on to Detroit or whatever the next biggest market is. Yeah, there was one guy who, just again on LOL, just tremendously fun to listen to because he rhymed all of his sentences and they came out natural. It wasn't like he was pushing it. It's just like, you'd swear you'd meet this guy and he just talked that way. And one day, gone, went to Philadelphia. You know, you move up to a bigger market. But I do say there was one guy that I had to laugh on. I think it was on 101, which is kind of the top 40 station for the one my daughter listens to now and sometimes me. And they were doing a contest where if he played the same song, you would win $1,000. And eventually if you did it a certain number of time, you put your name in a bucket for $10,000. Well, as a DJ, he kept playing it. And then they would do the promotion where they would be chewing him out for doing it. And he was very non-repentant. And I said, you are not costing this station $10,000 because we have to do a drawing because you did it. Sure enough, they did it. And then after they did the drawing, he got fired. And, you know, it was all a work, but it was pretty entertaining to listen to, especially when it was getting to it. And again, these are people I remember. I rarely remember names. We have one guy. Oh, what's his name on KQ? It's done the morning show forever. And he's not even
Bernard. Tom Bernard.
Tom Bernard. And he's not even here. He's down in Florida usually. They have a studio in his Florida home. He just walks in, sits down. Whoever's with him and comes up to the studio and they just do it remotely, which is always interesting because his show ends exactly at 9:20 and there's no real goodbyes. There's no fanfare. Just 9:20. Now here's a song. Boom. He's gone. But he's number one. I mean, they drove Howard Stern out of the market,
which was always weird. Well, Stern was number two in the market. But the station couldn't sell enough ads to make it profitable. To which Stern said after he was booted from the market that he's never dealt with a more incompetent sales staff. He would work with them to do live ads. Everything Stern has done, he goes out of his way to really, you know, sell, because you know, he's been in radio forever and ever and ever. And he said that the fact that he was the number two morning show and they couldn't sell enough ads.
And they really didn't promote him.
No. Means that they were incompetent. They, you know, if you've got the number two morning show in a market and you're not able to sell at least $1 million worth of ads through a year, and we're the number 16 market in the country, then you're doing something wrong.
And the other thing too is that the station format at the time, they were doing the modern rock and Clear Channel took their modern rock channel and went head to head formatting counter programming against them, trying to protect the KQ dynasty because that was really their moneymaker. And I was listening when it happened because, you know, what they would do is they would start Stern's show in the morning live. And then at 5 o'clock, they would cut to the show recorded, essentially started over. So it sounded like it was live, but you couldn't call and join in with whatever shenanigans he was doing. But the show would also run to about 10 o'clock. So I would get up because I never really listened to early morning radio and I would listen, you know, about 9 to 10 because that's usually when Robin was doing the news. And then all of a sudden, mid sentence, it quit. and you had two guys sitting here talking about sports. What they had done is they had taken their sports channel, totally killed the feed and killed the entire rock and roll station and just put their sports channel on there.
Yep.
To which everybody who was listening called the two poor sports guys, because suddenly they're starting to get a barrage of calls and hate calls that they have no idea what's going on. And at the time, I think this was morning, so they were pretty much doing a, hey, call in and let's talk sport. And now they can't do that because 90% of the calls they're getting are people outraged that all of a sudden Stern's gone with no warning. Meanwhile, over on 93X, which was the counter programming that Clear Channel threw against Stern, they're all celebrating on air. We won. Hey, the station manager's taking everybody out to lunch in celebration. Not me. I have to stay on the air, but we're going to keep playing some music. So it was a surreal day anyways, but I never knew the reason why. Cause I mean, it's like you said that he was number two without any push at all. I mean, I don't even think, I think they ran a few billboards that people protested. It was a model.
I don't remember.
It was a model in a bikini and it was Howard's back. Get it? You're looking at a bikini's back.
Yeah.
You know, and people protested it. But the interesting thing about it was, is people who hated Howard Stern listened to him more than people who liked him. And folks, regardless if you hate or dislike or like the person, if you're listening, that counts as ratings.
Yeah.
You're better off to do like Corey says. Just, I don't like Rush. I don't like Fox. I don't like Top 40 Radio. Don't listen to it.
Yep. What always got me, though, Tom Bernard and his crew lifted bits from Stern all the time, to the point where there is a performer on who was on Stern. His name was Red Peters, who wrote songs. He wrote dirty songs. And Bernard and his crew played a couple of these guys' songs, said that they created it, put it on one of their CDs, thinking they wouldn't get caught. Stern comes into the market. People start sending him tapes of all the bits that Bernard has lifted from him, including that. He let Red Peters know that his music was being stolen. So Red Peters sued. It was settled out of court for so much money. Red Peters says he never has to work again as long as he lives. He does a show every 2 or 3 months on one of Stern's channels. And usually when he does the show, he'll talk about, well, those guys in Minnesota have set me up for life.
I do. And then it was funny because when Stern was doing Sirius Radio, they ran ads during Tom Bernard's show in the morning.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Because there was one time when I was listening and you could hear coming out of the commercial, he was like, yeah, that's right. Beg for listeners, bitch. And Tom Bernard, being Tom Bernard, can pretty much say whatever Tom Bernard wants, and the station will go head over heels and apologize for him. Tom never apologizes.
You know? Right.
But, you know, when you make that much money. And the funny thing was, is when I first left to do my traveling, Tom was like, hey, I'm going to retire. Last show will be in summer. When I came back 7 months later, he's still on the air.
Yeah.
They toss so much money at him because not only does he do the radio show here, but then he does these voiceovers. I was down in Kansas City once and I heard him doing voiceovers. You know, he doesn't do them for the local market, but he does them all around the country. I don't think I've ever heard.
If you listen to Channel 5, all the promo for the news, you know, the coming up on Channel 5 news.
Oh, I don't.
He does all those.
No, sorry. I like to listen. I like to watch NBC News because Brian Williams just kind of lulls me to sleep.
Ah.
It's a good nap.
So geeking, what you geeking on, Joe?
Well, I'm at a hotel and I can actually use Netflix. So I've re-jumped onto the Avengers. I forget which one it is. It's the one where they actually are avenging. I think it's not XD, I don't think. But this is the season two. I watched season one while I was in Vegas. And it's really good because there's continuity. They're kind of merging different stories together. They're doing the Skrull. Sutor's running around with the Twilight Zone or Twilight Sword. The next episode has to do with Korvac. The Kree tried to invade Earth and Ms. Marvel came and kicked their ass. The fun thing about it is, the Fantastic Four appear, the X-Men appear, S.H.I.E.L.D. appear, Spider-Man will appear. So it's truly a Marvel Comics animated show, not just even though it says Avengers. And it's been just a lot of fun. I mean, the last one I saw, I think Scott Lang stole Hank Pym's Ant-Man and Pym called, Luke Cage and Iron Fist to, go after him. And there was even a Sweet Christmas in it. So that was a lot of fun. I should say I do have one geeking or one freaking.
Oh,
I'm not going to see the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Uh-oh.
Unless I can download it on iPad or iTunes, which I might be able to, I'm going to have to spend a lot of time avoiding spoilers. Oh, he regenerates. Oh, you bastard.
Spoilers, he beats the bad guy.
But the big thing is, I thought I was going to, you know, as I said, my laptop's, the screen's pretty much shot. So I bought a new laptop, but I pretty much figure once I'm off the road, I'll give it to my daughter. Problem is she was only using this laptop for internet. There's no software on it. I can't do Word. I can't do Excel, which is what I use in my job. I don't have my iTunes on it, so I can't download any iTunes. I had to get Norton's on it right away because there's, you know, after using, you know, AVS and McAfee's 29-day free samples, I didn't want to buy more because I've already bought Norton's. So, you know, I stopped Zillow. All these ones are great. They're like, oh, free for 29 days. So I got a nice laptop that's working. I just can't do anything outside of internet. And really, that's all I really need.
Well.
That's pretty much it. I mean, other than the fact it's warm.
So, no geeking? No geeking at all?
I like Avengers. I started with the Avengers. I mean, I will when I get home. I'll have a box waiting for me.
Well, that's good.
This week, really, there's not a lot of comics coming out. I mean, I looked at Diamond's list. I swear there was maybe 9 comics. None of them are late. They're just all ones from October release date. So, you know, if I go to the comic shops now, I probably won't even get anything to buy. Unless they have a lot of good back issues.
Well, as I said, I have been tearing through some of the 70s Marvel mags, and I'm reading Vampire Tales. The lead character is Morbius, the living vampire. And the first couple stories have been really strange. In that he does heroic things and then kills the person he saved because the bloodlust takes him over. So it's been a weird read on those. I'm also reading Marvel Preview, which was kind of their tryout book. And the fourth issue was a Thor story by Len Wein and drawn by Jim Starlin. And I've only seen a couple things Jim Starlin's done in black and white. This is prime 70s Jim Starlin art. It's phenomenal art. the story Lenween does is Thor before, basically it's a long time ago before Thor became Donald Blake, and he hangs around in Asgard, and it's really kind of just setups for Jim Starlin to draw really cool fight scenes. But the art is phenomenally good. Then in Vampire Tales, the second and third, no, just the second issue, was a Don McGregor character I knew nothing about. I've said many times Don McGregor is one of my favorite comic book writers. He had a character named Hodiah Twist. Hodiah Twist was a rich businessman in the 20s who lost everything during the stock market crash. His mind snapped, and he thought he was Sherlock Holmes. And there are only two stories. One was in Vampire Tales number 2, where he's investigating a murder and finds out that the murder was committed by a vampire. And I really like that it played with the fact that, okay, he's trying to solve this without anything supernatural, and supernatural things keep happening. And he keeps trying to explain it away. And then there was a second story in Marvel Preview, I think it was called Masters of Terror, which was, okay, let's take all the inventory from when we canceled all the horror black and white books, shove them into a book so we can at least, you know, we fill up a book, meet our deadline, and not have to have paid for stuff we're never going to print. So I have not read the second Hodiah Twist story. I am also Strange Tales, Joe. You remember Strange Tales, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who was the lead character in Strange Tales?
That was Doctor Strange, wasn't it?
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Savage Tales.
Oh, Savage Kazar.
Black and white. Yep. I didn't know that. I thought it was Conan.
Hmm.
So here are these Kazar stories. So it's, oh gosh, and I knew I had it, so I dug up. I have the Kazar series that ran from 74 to 77. Wow, what a weird series that was. The character Mockingbird, Bobby Morse, made her first appearances in this as a love interest for Kazar.
Ooh.
There's a lot of, what, there was a whole run of books where it's Kazar in New York fighting drug dealers. And you could tell that the fans weren't big on it because you'd read the letters pages like, why is Kazar in New York? Put him back in the Savage Land. Why are you ruining this book? Everybody involved needs to be fired. So then they put him back in the Savage Land. And the letters pages now become, why isn't Kazar interacting with the Marvel Universe more? Why isn't he fighting villains that we know? And why isn't he teaming up with heroes we know? It's like, if I were the editor, I would go, nothing we do will make you people happy, so we're just going to do what we want. John Buscema took over the art, around issue 4? And I could always tell when John Buscema likes what he's drawing, because on the superhero stuff, he would just do layouts, because superheroes bored him. And it's well known, he hated drawing buildings, he hated drawing cars. So in the Savage Land, he's drawing cavemen and dinosaurs, and a couple of the issues he inked himself, which was pretty rare. He only did that if he liked what he was doing. So those have been fun. Am I going to recommend them? They're fun. I'm not going to say they're great. I'm not going to say that you read these books and you're going to go, this is brilliant! But if you want to see a Tarzan knockoff, fight a bunch of ape men, yeah, the Kazar stuff's fun. The other thing I am geeking on, I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but I am reading the book Double Down about the 2012 election. And it's one of those where, okay, the election's over and everybody's spilling their guts. I'm a little over halfway done. And the thing I find most fascinating is everybody who was running for president in 2012 said, well, I'm going to run, but I know I'm going to lose. Obama thought the economy was going to tank him. Romney was basically running because his wife and his kids told him he had to. John Huntsman, his dad was the one who said, you got to beat Mitt Romney. I don't want him to be the first Mormon president because he's an asshole. And boy, these books where after the fact everybody throws blame. Oh, there's a lot of blame being thrown on everybody. This is like the, you know how in Hollywood the gossip is bad? In politics, the gossip is worse. Politics is Hollywood for ugly people. So if you're into that kind of thing, it's a really good book. And the last thing I'm geeking on is a book I don't have yet. It should be showing up any day now. Max Allen Collins, who has written comics and novels, has a new Quarry book coming out. Quarry is his hitman character. And it's through Hard Case Crime, so I'm really looking forward to getting a new Quarry book. And I'll probably read that in, I don't know, an hour, maybe two. Comic-wise, I am still getting caught up. I am now caught up on the X-Men stuff. And I noticed that in Bendis's two X-Men books, he's not focusing on the Wolverine team anymore. So I wonder where that's going to shake out.
And I really... Wolverine's got Wolverine in the X-Men book or whatever.
Which is being canceled.
And probably... Well, I did see Wolverine's getting another book.
Yep. They're going to relaunch Wolverine. And Wolverine is in the book Amazing X-Men, which was the other one I've read the first two issues of Amazing X-Men, which is Jason Aaron's book. They are bringing Nightcrawler back. And the problem I have with the book is all the stupid shit they've added to Nightcrawler over the years, where his dad is the devil and all that. But he's got – the first two issues are a fun action-adventure story with pirates in the afterlife. So what I'm hoping is that they do this story, they bring Nightcrawler back, and they kind of jettison all the stupid crap that they've grafted onto the character over the last 25 years. Because it got to the point where Nightcrawler, I didn't care about anymore. Oh, he's a priest whose dad was the devil, and his mom was Mystique, and his sister is... I don't care anymore. And he was whiny and angsty all the time. There are too many whiny, angsty X-Men. There should be a few X-Men who, you know what? I like being the superhero.
Yeah. Woe is me.
Yeah. I always said that when you read Marvel in the 70s, most of the characterization was incessant bellyache. Oh, I'm Spider-Man and I don't have enough money to pay my rent. My girlfriend was killed and my aunt is sick and the cops are hunting me. Or the thing, oh, I'm a big rocky monster and my girlfriend is blind and she won't like me if I'm not a monster. Or the Human Torch, oh, I can't get a girlfriend and I don't know what to do with my life. And incessant belly aching gets tiring after a while. That's why cuts me off when the freaking goes too long.
Let's talk about Paul McWinney. He bought his first record in 1951 and has been collecting ever since. There, he has over 3 million record albums, the largest collection in the world. But get this. The Library of Congress conducted a study on his collection and found that only 17% of the entire assortment is available on CD. Meaning a whopping 83% cannot be bought anywhere at any time.
That does not surprise me. And it's one of the reasons I still have my vinyl. Because I have a few albums that they never put out on CD. And they probably never will because nobody cares.
Well, I can tell you one thing. What you could buy with, or what you could have bought with $100,000...
A new house?
Well, I could tell you, Ralph E. Whittington,
a decent suit,
former curator at the Library of Congress, kept the world's largest professionally cataloged collection of pornography, labeled in bingo card boxes that his mother brought home from church.
Hold on. 70... Did you say bingo card boxes?
Bingo card.
Bingo.
That's actually better. 75% of this guy's collection, which filled two full trucks, over 500 large banker boxes, was purchased by the Museum of Sex for about a, and this guy, they didn't say how much they paid for it, but he spent over, well, about $100,000 amassing his collection for over 30 years. And the museum said, this is a collection you could not make now. It will be a primary source for historical research and a great repository of pulp culture.
So guess what, kids? You know how you're worried that when you die, somebody needs to clean out your house before your mom finds your porn?
Mm-hmm.
I think his mom knows about his porn collection.
Yep.
Here's the question that I have for you, Joe. Mm-hmm. When his mom found out that he'd spent $100,000 on two truckloads of porn, did she beat him with a fly swatter?
Well, the thing was, is they didn't say when they did this. I mean, obviously nowadays it's like, why? You just Google and get what you want. But who knows? All I'm saying is never throw anything away. Just collect everything. Maybe we should start a program called Collectors as opposed
and
to...
And you know what? If your stuff doesn't go up in value, you can make some money by being on the show Hoarders.
Yeah.
Well, Festivus is now over.
Thank God.
And now we're coming up on Christmas.
And that's my final grievance, is that I am spending another Christmas away from home. But I'll be warm.
Well, it could be worse.
It was raining.
No. It could be much, much worse. Mm. Joe, there's an old myth that used to be a part of Christmas that isn't anymore. But I've noticed that it's becoming popular again. Have you heard of the Christmas Krampus?
No.
Well, you know about Santa Claus, who travels the world and gives good children toys.
I think he works with the NSA.
The Krampus was a demon who, if the children were bad, would either, depending on what Germanic country you were in, either would roast and eat the bad children or beat them bloody with switches.
I'm waiting for you to laugh because I know you find that amusing.
I asked my son if he knew about the Christmas Krampus, and he said, yes, my son is now living here. And he said, oh, yeah, I've heard of the Krampus. And I said, well, all I want to tell you, my dear boy, you should be glad that I didn't know about the Christmas Krampus when you were a child. Or I would have scared the ever-loving piss out of you with this.
Well, let me ask you this. Did Sharon ever clean her room?
No.
There's my last
Mike
chance.
Mike had to clean her room and then he moved into it.
Chance for a Festivus miracle.
I think we need to send the Krampus to her new apartment. Well, believe it or not, kids, you've wasted an hour of your life listening to our grievances.
Mostly Corey's. I'm in Hawaii. I really got...
And Joe refusing to eat the spam.
Except when I go home in 2 weeks. Then I'll be grieving plenty.
But will you have spam when you come home? Because it is made in Minnesota.
Every last drop.
There you go. So, as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Hey, Joe.
Well, I'm in a hotel, so just play the music softly. We'll do a little tap dance.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky.